From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. On the northern edge of Caswell County, a roadside historical marker tells the story of the most successful furniture maker in antebellum North Carolina. It reads, Thomas Day, circa 1801 to 1861, free black cabinet maker in Milton, home and shop located here in the old Union Tavern, 1848 to 1858. Laurel Sneed, a designer of educational materials, drove past that sign several years ago and then turned back to take a closer look. That sign on the highway pointed her life in a whole new direction. Laurel Sneed eventually created a school curriculum focused on Thomas Day. The Thomas Day Education Project now trains teachers in classrooms across the country. The program's goal is to surprise students in much the same way that Laurel Sneed was surprised on that Caswell County road, to show that African Americans played a greater role in history than many of us know. Laurel Sneed is with us here now. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Frank.
Also with us are Beverly McNeil, a fourth grade teacher at George Watts Montessori Elementary in Durham. Welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And Ken Grady is a historical reenactor. Ken, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank.
Laura, let me start with you. Tell us about Thomas Day.
Well, Thomas Day is a very interesting person in American and North Carolina history. He was born in Virginia in 1801 to free parents, free people of color, both his mother and father. He was, as a young man, trained in the cabinetry craft by his father, who was a cabinet maker. And in the around 1817, 1818, he moved to North Carolina. A lot of free blacks at that time were leaving Virginia. By 1830, he was well established in the town of Milton as a furniture maker, and his business continued to grow over the course of the 1830s, 1840s.
And as a free black in North Carolina, he had no trouble growing his business.
I wouldn't say he had no trouble. Of course, even though he was free, there were very stringent laws on the books governing all aspects of free of the lives of free blacks. We must put the term free blacks in quotations because we would not consider today Thomas Day free. He was very constrained in all of his activities. He could not go from Milton to Raleigh without carrying a pass. But nevertheless, despite these laws, in the small community that he found himself in, he was able to make his way. He was able to get the friendship and the support of the people in that community. They wanted his business. He was a person of impeccable character, and he was a person who was, after all, an American businessman, and he represented a lot of American ideals. So he didn't have it as bad as some people, but his life was very difficult, and yes, he lived in a racist society. So was it a piece of cake? No. But was it better than being enslaved? Yes.
And he was a master furniture maker. Describe that furniture for us.
Well, he was working in the traditions, the furniture traditions of that time. Most great cabinet makers of the period worked from pattern books that came out of Philadelphia and the big cities. Thomas Day put his own little spin on a lot of the furniture. It has been described as Southern vernacular furniture. A lot of it is very large. He has been called the master of mahogany because he used mahogany wood to veneer the furniture. Mahogany was too expensive to make solid mahogany wood. Mm. But the pieces today are very large, formidable, really. The work that is the most striking to me is the work he did in interior, the interiors of plantations, the interior architecture, the newel post, stair railings, trim. Some of this work is like art. It really speaks to you.
Some of it's around today.
Absolutely. It exists in many homes in the Caswell County area in Southern Virginia. Some of his newel posts really look like modern sculptures. They're just very compelling.
Ken Grady, you are a historical reenactor, and you reenact the life of this figure, the Thomas Day, who, as you say, is a cabinet maker before the Civil War. What was his character like?
Thomas Day was a man of great character. He had spiritual fiber. You can find that in his letters. He was a family man. he was very concerned that his children, once they became educated, learned to move throughout society as, quote, free people, as he did, and not be, while not being boastful or with an attitude, being proud of who they were and setting no limits on themselves. In fact, in one line in his letter to his daughter, he said, you know, perhaps you can do this or that in your travels, perhaps on the broad ocean. So he was giving her permission to branch out and do whatever she felt she could do.
Do you know if it was permission or more than that? Did he think that his children had a future in the South?
Now, I don't know that he thought that, because all the while he was in Milton, he was not as happy as folks might think. He was a successful businessman, but it was an obscure existence in Milton. His mother being ill brought him there. There were some reasons for commerce why he stayed in the area, the railroad and the river and things of that nature as well. But it was clear that he wanted to leave Milton as soon as he could.
Laurel, tell us a little more about his family background, his father and mother, and his brother also had a kind of an interesting career.
Right. His father was a cabinet maker from Southern Virginia, a person born in 1766. Both his parents were born before the American Revolution. His father's name was John Day, and he was a respected cabinet maker. There was a big furniture-making tradition after the American Revolution in Petersburg, Virginia, when we weren't getting furniture from the Brits anymore, had to be made locally, and there was a burgeoning furniture scene going on in Petersburg, and his father was part of that. His mother was born into a wealthy, and again, this is an idea that is, it's new to most of us, but she grew up in a wealthy free black family in Southern Virginia. Her father was named Dr. Thomas Stewart, and he was a free, quote, colored, unquote, medical doctor. So the families were both quite prominent that Thomas Day's parents came from.
How does one, if you were a slave, how do you acquire your freedom at this period?
Well, there's several ways you can acquire your freedom. If you have a craft skill like many enslaved people did, in some cases you can buy your freedom by using your skill. Mm-hmm. Many slaves who had crafts were hired out, and they were allowed to keep a portion of their the earnings. The master, of course, kept most of the earnings. Some enslaved people ran away and claimed their freedom by being a fugitive. Frederick Douglass, one of the great enslaved people who we know about, that's what he did. Many other people tried to do that. People were constantly running away. It was very treacherous and dangerous to do that. In some cases, people were manumitted by their masters. Often when the master died, when they no longer needed them. But that was not that easy. You had to go to court to obtain permission to free your slaves. Now, Thomas Day, because his mother was free, he was free because the child's status followed the status of the mother. And because his mother was free, he was free.
Beverly McNeil, you're a fourth grade teacher at George Watts Montessori. And when we teach history, and we're going to talk more about the curriculum and how Thomas Day is going to work his way into the curriculum here in North Carolina and across the country. But when we teach history in general, we're always talking about sort of the famous people and the movers and shakers. And so when we try to tell the story of a cabinet maker like Thomas Day, how do we fit that into the fourth grade curriculum?
Well, in fourth grade, we learn about North Carolina history. And, of course, in the previous economy of the state, at any rate, the furniture industry was a very, very important part. One of the first people to mechanize a furniture shop, he actually had moved from hand tools into steam-driven equipment. He represents a major technological change. And because of the size of his shop and the fact that he was selling to very prominent people, including governors of our state, for instance, he is significant in our history an economic standpoint.
So was this technology that he pioneered, or was it technology that he brought into the state for his own word?
Well, he was a pioneer in its use in our state.
Tell us briefly about the curriculum itself.
Well, Thomas Day was really kind of the lightning rod that got us all interested in new ways of approaching black history in education. We focus on Thomas Day, but Thomas Day, as you point out, Frank, is just representative of a lot of other kinds of, not ordinary people, but people who I would say are more human scale people. We use other people like that, Elizabeth Keckley, a person who was enslaved here in North Carolina. So we focus on people in these stories, often stories in their own words, told in slave narratives, which are memoirs. A lot of people who were enslaved wrote, mainly to inspire abolition. Another part of our approach, our pedagogy to teaching black history, is what we call pieces of the past, artifacts. You mentioned the furniture. Kids can relate to furniture. As someone told me years ago, kids can relate better to furniture than they can to battles. You know, everybody's got a bed. I don't care if you're from Guanajuato, Mexico, or Switzerland, or rural North Carolina. You know what a bed is. When they see Thomas Day's bed, they can immediately connect. Another part is places. We take kids to historical places. And in North Carolina, of course, we've got, you know, such an abundance of, right here, we're sitting in tobacco warehouses. I still can't quite get over it. And the other part of our curriculum is processes. Historians are great detectives. They are figuring out what happened by looking at these remnants of the past, by looking at the words that people said, by looking at things they made, by looking at historical documents, records in courthouses. They have to piece together what happened to create a narrative. We try to engage kids in that kind of detective work and thinking. It's really critical thinking.
Well, it sounds, too, like it may be a great way to teach history in general, to take a look at these kind of figures. And we will talk more about that as our program continues with Laurel Sneed, the founder of the Thomas Day Education Project, Beverly McNeil, who teaches at George Watts Montessori Elementary School in Durham, and Ken Grady, a historical reenactor for the Thomas Day Project. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. We're talking today about the cabinet maker Thomas Day. He was one of the most successful furniture makers of his time before the Civil War, and he was a free African American. His story inspired the Thomas Day Education Project, an effort to teach African American history across the curriculum. We're joined by founder Laurel Sneed, and also Beverly McNeil, a teacher at the George Watts Elementary School, and Ken Grady, a historical reenactor at the African American Cultural Complex in Raleigh. And Ken, Thomas Day lived in Milton. You have a portion of his letter with you that kind of expresses how Thomas Day felt about Milton. We talked about that a little earlier. Could you read that for us?
Yes, this is a letter Thomas Day wrote to his daughter Mary Ann in 1851 as she was preparing to leave school and come back home. And he says, "My dear daughter, Mary Ann, we are in receipt of your letters regularly and glad to hear from you. We are pleased to know you are well and to hear of your satisfaction in your home, and hope your religious enjoyments may continue a comfort to you and consolation to the brethren with whom you associate. The time is drawing to a close when I hope to meet with you again, and I hope your return to Milton will be a source of comfort, notwithstanding the obscure residence you may have here. You inquire how long before I leave Milton, and also observe you can't see how I have lived in Milton so long. I can tell you it will not be a very great while before I hope to leave Milton, and I can also tell you that I have long since learned to enjoy my life in a higher circle than depending on human society for my comfort or happiness. My pleasures are placed in hope beyond this world. My highest pleasure is in the discharge of my everyday duty as nearly as possible."
A letter by Thomas Day to his daughter talking about living in the and enjoying the higher circles. What were his social circles like in Milton?
We don't know that much about all of Thomas Day's contacts, but the evidence that we have suggests that he had a considerable social circle throughout, not just in North Carolina, but among free blacks and others around the country. For example, this school where he sent his daughter to, Wesleyan Academy in Wilbraham, Massachusetts, was founded by Methodists. He sends all of his children there. It is an abolitionist, a school run by assertive abolitionist people whose views would be considered very radical indeed in North Carolina in 1850. He knew these people. We have indications that he knew other people and had many connections. In North Carolina, we mostly see his contacts with his customers, the white people, the prominent white people he knew in Milton and throughout the state. But he did indeed have other contacts.
Beverly McNeil, you grew up in North Carolina. Had you ever heard of Thomas Day?
No. I had never heard of him until I was an adult. And oddly enough, my interest in him arose from that very same road sign. When I was a much younger woman, my father had an office in Milton about half a block from the tavern. So I had seen the sign, and I wondered why I'd never heard of this man before. Mm-hmm. And when in 97, I saw a flyer for the first series of seminars for teachers that Laurel and Charlie had organized, I called them and begged to be allowed to attend because it was late.
And what did you think as you learned, as you began to learn more and more? And about how old were you now? So you're a teacher when you
I was very much an adult.
Yeah,
yes.
And you start finding out. What's going through your mind as you learn about this great cabinet maker?
It's just, why didn't I know about this man?
Yeah. When you teach it now, how do the kids respond when they hear about this man?
Well, one of the lessons in the kit, which is the first set of materials about Day that were developed, and they were developed by the first group of teachers to go through a seminar, one of our first NEH seminar, was that there's a lesson where we read a short bio of Day and then ask the children to write a description of him and for the younger ones to draw a picture of him. And very rarely is he drawn as an African-American. Mm. I mean, it's just the idea of someone African-American being that successful and being a respected person within his community is so incongruous that it just never occurs to the children at all.
So it strikes me that one of the things you teach with this is not only the importance of African Americans in American history and a place in history, but also the danger of stereotype and how easy it is to creep in.
Yes, that's absolutely one of the points of that lesson, so that we can move from other kinds of stereotypes about people. Because the antebellum period is hard for a lot of people to deal with. We have so much emotional, well, I don't want to say baggage, but let's see, there's so much emotional impact to that period because some of us really don't have a lot of background. We build on what we think it was like, and we don't try to deal with it. And one of the things that we do in terms of looking at people's lives, not just Day's, but also enslaved people at that time, is to look at the fact that, contrary to what most people think, most enslaved people were not just taking it, that there was a tremendous amount of resistance on many, many levels. Because that's one of my students' first responses, well, I wouldn't have taken it, I would have smacked someone. And I said, no, wait a minute, you're 10 years old. If you do that, someone's going to beat the daylights out of you.
If you're lucky, that's all that'll happen.
If you're lucky. Or they'll sell you away from your mom. Yeah. So then we get into the fact that there were all kinds of resistance that was done. And he said, now you're 10 years old. You are not going to smack somebody. What can you do to get back at someone who is treating you in a way that you don't like? And so the children, and of course, little children can relate to that because they understand power dynamics.
They've got to come up with some of the best schemes in the world, right? Because they're too small. Yeah.
Anyone who's got children knows how very well they can manipulate those situations. So he started talking about it. He said, well, what could you do? And they said, oh, well, you know, I could spit in their coffee. Said, yeah. And someone else said, well, if I was bringing clean clothes, I could drop them on the floor and then pick them up and arrange them, and no one would know that I'd put a muddy fingerprint on the inside. I said, yeah. And then someone else said, well, I could bring in the bath water and say, I don't know how that frog got in there. So the children they understand. Yeah. And when you start reading the narratives, and they are really incredible. We've got several collections that are really good. One of the books that they really love is one by a man named William Henry Singleton, who's another person that people don't know about. And he ran away as a child. You know, he was sold away from his mother. She was out working in the fields, and someone came, and he was called into the owner's house and the slave owner's house, and a man offered him candy and said, "Do you like me?" And of course, being 4 years old and fond of candy, he said, "Sure." And he said, "Do you want to go with me?" And he said, "Sure," thinking he would get more candy. And he was taken away from his mother into Georgia to a woman who bought very young children and trained them and raised them and then sold them. And he got angry with her one day and ran away and managed to get back all the way from Atlanta back to near New Bern.
That story must be inspiring for the kids.
Yeah,
I would imagine. Laurel, it is not by accident that we don't know about these figures in history. It certainly was the intention for a long time not to tell the story. That's not the case now. How did you go about putting this curriculum together, and how has it been received?
Well, it was a rather circuitous route because I'm by training a media producer and an educational media producer. I saw a need for high-tech educational media and materials on this subject for North Carolina schools. While when I first got started back in the early 90s, there were a lot of materials available on, again, the big names we sometimes call the greatest hits, Martin Luther King, Sojourner Truth, on national level figures. But there was not that much on our very rich North Carolina history. There was nothing for the curriculum on Thomas Day, for example. Now, one thing I need to underscore is in the national standards, national curriculum standards in North Carolina, they're called the standard course of study, there are standards that say we have to be teaching this subject. So this is not like something that's out of the mainstream of the curriculum. The problem is people have not been, do not have this knowledge. I know when I was in school in North Carolina, I don't think slavery was even mentioned except maybe a paragraph in my history book and when I studied North Carolina history. It's a subject that, of course, people are a little bit nervous about because they think, oh my gosh, we're going to raise, we're going to stir up some emotions, we're going to be talking about race, and I don't know how to maybe deal with the reactions and some of the things that might be said. So there's a little fear and trepidation on the part of some teachers. What we found, though, is when they have the knowledge of this history, in general, they are very eager to take it out there. The knowledge is empowering on so many levels. It empowers the teachers. They think, well, we need to be talking about this. So,
yeah, it gives them a vocabulary. I think maybe part of the fear for a teacher to take on a subject like this is, what words do I use? What's the terminology? And what's a safe way to approach the subject?
Right.
And you can offer some of that.
So I started out wanting to produce media and technology, and the teachers kind of guided me. On that. Back in those days, people said, wait a minute, we don't really have the greatest technology. Maybe we should do something more hands-on. So that was the beginning of the Thomas Day Furniture Kit. So the more I brought teachers and scholars together, and the more we became aware of emerging scholarship, those three elements came together to create ideas for lesson plans, curriculum, videos, films. We work with the best scholars in the country in African American history. Many of them are right here in our own backyard. We're blessed in Durham with having the great preeminent African American historian, Dr. John Hope Franklin, right here, and all of his works. And he has been a great friend of the project. Dr. Peter Wood at Duke, Dr. Percy Murray at North Carolina Central, Bill Anders at UNC. I can go on and on. I mean, we have great African-American scholarship right here. We have archives at UNC, the Center for the American South, and then we have teachers. You get those two together, teachers and the scholarship, and you're going to get some very exciting curriculum.
And Ken Grady, your family fits into the category, I guess, of African-American history in North Carolina and North Carolina's history. Your great-grandfather grew up in slavery and then went on to become a state representative.
That's right. He was born in 1854. He was 10 when slavery ended. And in 1885 was elected to the state house representing New Hanover County. And when I found that out, I was intrigued, of course, by that. But I also found out the larger point that New Hanover County from 1865 to 1898 elected 16 African Americans, former slaves, to public office in the state and one to the U.S. Senate. So, again, I can talk about my great-grandfather. There's a historical marker for him. But the larger story is that there are a lot of other people, just like Thomas Day is a great example, and that we should point him out to folks and say that he has been called the father of the modern furniture industry in North Carolina and hold him up for that. But when we also consider others, think about things we use every day. And here are three examples: clothes dryer, lawn sprinkler, refrigerator. And have African Americans have patents in the 1800s for those items. They weren't the only ones, but they were inventing. And I think if we begin to appreciate those folks as African Americans, and then the larger society does, I think it would do a lot for better understanding between the races.
Laurel, do you see this as a kind of a process where the first thing we do, and what we have to do for a while perhaps, is begin to illuminate the contributions of African Americans almost in isolation, to pull them out and say, you know, as Ken just did, take a look at the dryer, take a look at all these things and understand this, the contribution of African Americans, and then come to the point where we no longer have to sort of highlight that, but it is in fact integrated? Or how do you think that's going to play out?
Well, this is American history, but as you point out, this is American history that has for too long and for, you know, most of the history of education was not included in the teaching of history. This is why Black History Week was created, as a way of saying, hey, there's also a black side to American history. There's also an African-American experience. So I think we need Black history, if that's kind of where you're going, to remind us that this is an important and critical part of our history. But of course it is American history, and to me it is critically important American history, because we still are a nation that is living the effects of the legacy of slavery, which is racism and racial division. So how do we deal with that? How do we deal with today? The kids know we live in a racially divided society. They want to understand. You ask how this material is received by kids. Well, I've never seen a kid who's bored by this subject. They want to know. They want to understand, how do we get to where we are today? This is our shared past.
Well, let me pursue that with Beverly. Is the fact that we have lived a divided history for so long, does that mean that we'll always, in some ways, have to teach it as a divided history?
I hope not. And I think that that's why I think the project has focused so much on educating teachers. Because once that information is available to people other than scholars in universities, then it will start to be integrated into the standard curriculum in schools. And that's the kind of thing that we do, working with the teachers, is helping them to look for people in their own areas, using what we've done as a model to figure out how, you know, who was in their community doing things. And it does not necessarily have to even be African Americans, but people of color or people of other ethnic groups, so that information can be brought into the curriculum. And eventually the curriculum will include all of the people who have brought their gifts and their strengths to make this country what it is.
And Ken Grady, I would think the opportunity for drama and for acting out the characters, particularly if we switch roles racially, would be an enormous opportunity.
Well, it is. It's an enormous opportunity for me and for everyone who's been involved in the project that I am familiar with. One thing I'd like to say, if I could, though, to underscore what Laurel and Beverly have said, that seems to be a kind of a theme. You know, the knowledge, getting the knowledge out there for everybody. I was on a job recently in Cape Hatteras, and I was working with a gentleman who was 72, and he said we were doing a photo shoot, and he said, what else do you do? And I said, well, I do reenactments of Thomas Day, and I went on to explain who he was. Here's a guy, 72. He said, why is it I never heard of him? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, there's the rub right there. And so, you know, it made me think about a quote from Wendell Berry, the poet and author, who talked about, if we don't know each other's stories, we will not help each other, we will not trust each other, and we will fear each other. And that's kind of what we have here. And so if we can get these stories out and let people see that, yes, African Americans contributed greatly to the building of this country and should you know, be held in as much esteem as anyone else, it would raise up African Americans and it would create a better understanding of who we are in this society.
Ken Grady, I want to thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ken Grady is a historical reenactor for the Thomas Day Project and the African American Culture Complex in Raleigh. Beverly McNeil teaches at George Watts Montessori Elementary School in Durham. And Laurel Sneed is the founder of the Thomas Day Education Project. And Laurel, you also have a website that you can go to.
Yes, we do. We are now recruiting for our teacher workshops on Thomas Day and Elizabeth Keckley called the Crafting Freedom Workshops at www.thomasday.net.
Thank you all for joining me.
Thank you.
Coming up, the Saar family's artwork on the state of things. Stay with us.